this is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institutions, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety in AA, see the AA safety card and safety in AA, our common welfare. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Now Lindsay will read the steps.
Lindsay, alcoholic.
Hey, Lindsay.
Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for our knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by a main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statements of unity and anonymity, and therefore ask all of our speakers to identify by first name only and to refrain from using profanity. Tonight, our first 10-minute speaker is Matt.
Grateful to be here, grateful to be sober today. My sober date is May 28th, 2020. I have a home group called Sober Dads Boston, and the other thing, the sponsor thing. I have a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor, and I take guys through the steps as well. I want to say it's good to say I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. I was in a meeting yesterday at work, and I was not paying a lot of attention, and we were asked to on the Zoom meeting to introduce ourselves, and I'm not going to exaggerate and say, like, I almost said, I didn't almost say it, but I, you know, after I had said I'm Matt, you know, it was that moment where I was pretty close. So to say, you know, I'm an alcoholic in this room and not get, like, stared at weirdly or for it to be a total normal thing to say is pretty nice. Also tells me that I'm in the right place and I have a lot of people who can relate when I say I'm an alcoholic, so it feels good. I'm also grateful to be an alcoholic because it brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, which has really changed my life, you know, for the best. I really did a 180 from before I was in here, and I'll get to that a little bit in the strength and hope part. But my experience was, not very special. You know, I drank for over 20 years, and I really liked it in the beginning. And it was something that was very just normal in my 20s and getting into my 30s. It's just like what my friends and I did. We drank on the weekends. When we met up, it was usually at night after work. We would drink. We would be at a bar, or we would go to dinner, or whatever. It was just something that was just totally normal, in my 20s. And we all got drunk, and we all got hungover. You know, like, did I drink more than others? Did I like pregame more than some of my friends? You know, probably. But we all felt like crap the next day. And it was just the routine of what we did. And then, you know, I remember getting into my 30s and still thinking, well, I'm still like close to my 20s, and you know, the 20s was like close to college, and you know, life just kept kind of moving forward. But I was progressively drinking more and not paying attention to it, really. So maybe one year it was three nights a week, next year it was four, and it just kind of kept going. By the time I came to AA, I had two kids and a wife, and it had been a few years at that point of, you know, drinking six, seven nights a week. And if it was six nights, it's because I really tried to limit it to six. If it was five, you know, I had a great week, I guess, but it was often seven, and you know, I felt like I actually had control over it towards the end too, because I knew I could have like, I think I had like a magic number. It was like seven or eight mixed drinks of a certain type that I drank every day, and if I drank seven, I could get to work on time in the morning and function and not feel great, but make it through the day. If I had more than that, it was tough. So it was almost this idea of like I was in control. I could control my drinking, but when it got to be a problem for the family, when I could tell that I was really kind of hurting my wife and not being a great present dad, it's hard to read your kids a bedtime story and trying to hold a drink and a book at your son at the same time. Which would lead to me resenting my kids for having to hear a bedtime story. But when it was getting to be bad towards the end like that, I really tried to moderate my drinking. I did the things that it says in the big book of trying to drink only a certain number of nights a week, or trying to not drink so much hard alcohol, hard liquor, and cut back. And whatever it was, I tried and I couldn't do it. I really tried before my first son was born to just like take a break, like a few months off. And I made it like two or three days, things, and I just was like bawling to my wife. I'm like, this isn't gonna work. Like I can't stop. I need this. I didn't know anything about AA, but I knew that like I could. All, I was there was the leash was kind of like running shorter and shorter. I heard the other day, it was like, you got a nudge by a judge or a knife from the wife or something. I don't know what the knife seemed extreme, but you know, I like to say I got to A to get my wife off my back. I remember I had like the app on my phone for meetings for a good year before I even went to my first meeting, and I even like, you know, would show her once in a while, like, look, I have, you know, I know there are meetings nearby, like I'm, you know, I can go, you know, I will. I remember one conversation that came up a number of times where I was telling my wife, I would say, you know, I know that I said tonight I'm not going to drink, but tomorrow I'm not going to drink, you know. And it was, I woke up that day just, I really didn't want to drink that day, and I promised myself I wouldn't, and I meant it. And by 3 p.m, something happened in my mind, and it was just, the relief came when I had made the decision that I was going to stop the liquor store right after work and start drinking on my drive home from work. So I found my way to the meeting. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know anyone who was in AA or having family. You know, I thought you came in and you had to, like, I think my only idea of what it looked like was from the movie Half-Baked. So, like, I thought I would have to get up, you know, like, at the podium and, like, share my story immediately. And, you know, that wasn't it. But I found out that these speaker meetings, you can go and you weren't expected to share. You can go and listen. And I sat in the back and did these for a number of months while I continued to drink. And I didn't go to closed meetings. I thought closed meetings meant you, like, needed a, like, password or, like, a card, a membership card or something to get in. But eventually, you know, it wasn't working, and I kept hearing about the 90 and 90. So to do the 90 and 90, I had to kind of branch out a little bit and try some different meetings. And that's when I started going to some men's meetings and some discussion meetings, and finally got, you know, my first few phone numbers, and, you know, started to be around people who were more my age, you know, because in the beginning I was around, say, an older generation. And I, you know, I was learning a lot. And I remember the first meeting I went to, it was a bunch of older guys. And it kind of looked like I'd walked into a bar room. Like, it was like the guys there looked like the guys I would see at the bar. But they were all, they didn't look drunk. You know, they looked kind of happy and relaxed. And I remember that even if I didn't take a lot away from that first meeting, and my ears were like full of cotton, I guess, as they say, but I remember seeing the look on these faces of, like, contentment and ease and some happiness. So I just kept coming, and I started taking the suggestions. And maybe part of it was I wanted to kind of fit in with the other guys in these meetings. So I you know, kept going to the meetings they suggested and got a sponsor and started working the steps. And, yeah, life today has just been a life second to none. If it wasn't for AA, I wouldn't have found a higher power, which I choose to call God, which I found through these rooms. So it's, you know, it's my higher power, it's doing the work, and it's the people in these rooms like you, the fellowship. Some of my best friends today are guys I've met in these meetings. And it's great to just, you know, call each other up and talk about what we're going through. It's not something I still have some of my old friends. We don't call each other up and talk about our feelings so much. But, you know, to be able to really work on myself in the past 3.5 years, 3+ years, has been great. So I'm going to keep coming, and thanks for listening.
You will now observe the 7 tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The 7th tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the 7th tradition is essential at every level of AA service. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, GSO has withdrawn approximately $4.5 million from the reserve fund. AA's usual suggestion is $2 contribution per meeting. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the 7th tradition digitally on Venmo. There is a QR code in the basket, and our Venmo handle is @beacon-group. Again, although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $400 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan, with any questions. We thank you in advance for your generosity. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Mike has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
I'm Mike, I'm an addict.
Hey, Mike.
The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA, as such, ought never to be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Awesome, thank you. The Beacon Group is run by a business meeting which meets tonight. So just stay tonight. But it's on the Wednesday of each month at the end of the meeting. It's going to be here until the foreseeable future. All right, this is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? Awesome. And now let's welcome our 10-minute speaker, Emily.
Hey, Emily.
There's a lot more people in here than when I first got in. With 10 minutes, I'll keep my past, I guess, pretty brief. But what I can say is my past is filled with, you know, abuse, trauma, all sorts of things, and I truly don't believe that's what made me an alcoholic. I have never been able to drink well. I was handed a book about alcoholism when I was 16, and that was the first time I attempted to get sober, and I managed to stay sober for 2 months. And the first night I started drinking, I blacked out, and that was just kind of the way life was for me. I didn't really think I had a problem because I just drank on weekends. I was drinking just like everyone else, except for I was the one everyone was mad at all the time. I caused a lot of pain for a lot of people, and I embarrassed myself on a regular basis, and I still wanted to drink no matter what. Like, I didn't care. You know, a few days would go by and I'd just kind of forget that that happened. And eventually at 21, I was failing all of my classes. I had lost pretty much all of my friends, and I didn't want to be on this earth anymore. And I was having like panic attacks every other day, sprinkled with some anxiety attacks, but mostly panic attacks. And my parents put me in treatment, and I was really willing. I was like, everyone hates me, and there's no point in me being around. So I went to treatment and threw myself into AA very quickly, and it was the first time I finally got to leave home, and it was only 4 hours away, but it felt very big at the time. And I went to South Florida, where a lot of people, there's a big recovery scene there, and I did everything I was told to do. Looking back, I realized that I was really just kind of, it was like another excuse to like make friends and be popular and be cool. So I just did everything with all the people that I thought looked fun and exciting. And when that started to wear off, when I went back to school in the fall, I relapsed after 7 months and was out for only 6 weeks. Ended up on the side of the interstate with a police officer and did not go to jail. I don't know how. I didn't know where I was, and stayed sober for 6 years after that. And for the first 3 years, everything was pretty good. I went to meetings. I was had a great relationship with my higher power. Even when I wasn't doing well, it was something I leaned into. Did the steps, went through with the sponsor, had several sponsees, did everything I was supposed to, and then, you know, life got good and I stopped going to meetings. At 3.5 years, I moved to New Jersey, went to a couple meetings and thought they were horrible, and just decided I was done. And did some other things, became like really spiritual, was in a integrative health master's program, kind of kept me sober for a little bit until I got a job in New York City and everybody I was with partied like crazy and I wanted to do that too. So I stayed out for about 6 years and did a lot of bad things, but there was a lot of gaps in between where I was totally fine. Like nothing bad happened. But I lost a lot of friendships. I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of, and I'd be very upset if somebody did to me. And I just started becoming really depressed and miserable again. But I somehow thought I was still kind of normal because it took me a minute to realize that I surrounded myself with all alcoholics as well. So like everybody around me was drinking pretty similarly. But I realized that, like, especially now that I'm sober, that's all my friends talk about. Like, we're going to this bar, we're doing this, we're going out. Like, that's all anything is about. And I just didn't really realize it. And about a little over a year ago, I finally married my husband, well, now ex. And we had a lot of big issues, and I did not want to deal with them. I thought they'll just work themselves out. And our wedding was like honestly one of the worst days of my life. I won't get into it too much, but everything that could have gone wrong did, and I really hope someone makes a movie about it one day, just because it's really worthy of that. And it was very bad, and I just started daily drinking ever since that. And we went on our honeymoon to Scotland and Ireland, which it was totally normal, but even I was embarrassing myself around people that drank all day, every day in this country, or in these countries. And I just kept going through the summer like that, all the way through the fall. I had to ruin a couple of bachelorette parties that I was maid of honor in, and woke up one day in Tulum, Mexico, and was like, this isn't it. Like, I for the first time in 6 years, I had like the tiniest, babyest little window where I was like, it's now or never. And I was having like a horrible panic attack. Definitely stole the attention from the bride, so I regret that. But she's forgiven me. And this is like my favorite thing about the whole thing. Not in the moment, but as I'm crying, having like a mental breakdown, and my dad calls me, and he's like, "What's going on?" And then his first thing is like, "Are you ruining your sister's bachelorette?" And I'm like, "Probably." And but I looked down at my wrist and my tattoo. I got a tattoo when I was sober the first time, and I realized it was the same date that I got sober 6 years before, and that was not intentional by any means. And I reached out to just two people I knew that were sober that lived near me in California, and was like, I need help, and if I don't text you guys right now, I'm just gonna do this again in 3 days. Like, this happens to me all the time. And I went to treatment, and I was there for about 4 months, and it was really hard. You would think, like, California, sunny, beautiful, the weather was horrible, the food was horrible, everything was really nice, I'm just kidding, but I just didn't care. I was like, I can't be in life right now. I don't want to live. I would rather someone just run me off the road, like. And I just did everything they said. I may have broken a few rules, but that happens. But I stayed sober, and I decided on a whim that I was gonna move back to the East Coast because my husband and I are breaking up, so I was like, go ahead and come back over here, and just picked Boston for really no good reason. and landed here in April. I'd never been to Boston, and I don't think I'm ever going to leave. I love it here. And I kind of just did a few things in AA, didn't really love it here, and then saw my sponsor speaking at a, or my now sponsor, speaking at a meeting, and she told me about this meeting, and I have noticed such a huge shift in the quality of my life. I'd be lying if I said I haven't cried, and it hasn't been really hard to do these steps really thoroughly this time and to be honest. Not look at myself as a victim is really hard, and I'm currently on step four, and it's like I was telling someone today that this is the first time in a really long time that I'm living in today. I have never lived in today. I am always looking at what happened months ago or what's on the agenda, to the point where I don't even tell people usually what I'm doing in the next few weeks. I don't even want to talk about it. And I just go by minute, hour by hour now, and it's just such a relief. And that is just a direct result of daily praying, being in the steps, keeping AA in the forefront. Because I know what will happen if I don't, and if that's the only thing anyone can take from here, don't get too comfortable, because the more that I'm in it, the safer I am, the better I am to the people around me, the better I am to myself. And yeah, that's about it.
Thank you, Amber. We encourage all attendees to participate fully in our meeting and have a service position. If you'd like to be of service, please see our jobs coordinator, Ramiro, after the meeting. And now let's welcome our main speaker, Julian.
Hi, everybody. I'm Julian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Julian.
I really need a microphone, but I will use it. I can project. Thank you so much, Amanda, for asking me to share. I'm really grateful to be here. My sobriety date is May 1st, 2005. My home group is a men's Zoom meeting on Monday nights called Dignitary Sympathies. I do have a sponsor, I do have sponsees, and I say that because one of the gifts of this program is that on a daily basis I get to forget that I'm an alcoholic, right? Coming from where I came from, thinking and not understanding about alcoholism and addiction and thinking that I was utterly insane and the only answer to my problem was suicide, to get out of the hell, for me, 18 years later, to be sitting here and forget that I'm an alcoholic is a pretty big deal, right? I know I have 30 minutes, but I'm gonna probably keep my experience pretty short, right? I don't got any funny anecdotes. My life was a train wreck. And I started drinking, smoking cigarettes and smoking pot at 11 years old, and I ended at 24 with a needle in my arm. Every opportunity to get sober along that way, along that path, was given to me, right? Arrests pretty early on. I got kicked out of high school. I crashed cars. I lost relationships. I tried geographical cures. I overdosed, methadone clinics, all the things, right? And none of that stuff got me sober, right? And I'm gonna share with you a couple takeaways from that 13 years from 11 to 24 of what really stuck out to me in hindsight. You know, first things first is when I was like 11 years old, it was one of the first times where that self reflection on myself being like, I'm not cool enough, I'm not popular enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm not anything enough happened. And I looked at my group of friends and I was like, you guys aren't cool, I need new friends. And I went and found the kids that were cool, and I became friends with them, and we all started smoking pot together, and we all started drinking, right? And it was it, and it was great. And typical alcoholic, right? Drink for the first time, stealing someone's mom's vodka and putting it with orange juice, and it was the best, right? The best experience of my life at that time. And immediately, it was on, right? Next thing is probably around 14, was probably the first time that I could say that I noticed I was different from everyone else. So I had friends, right? I had more than enough friends, and we were around on a half day, and we were calling around trying to get some weed, and we couldn't get it, right? Which is a very rare occurrence for us at that time, but I'm like making a big deal of it. Like, call this person, and we're trying, and we're striking out, and my whole mood and my demeanor is changing. And I'm like, what are we gonna do? And everyone else is like, this is what we're doing. And I was like, nah, this isn't enough, right? And a common theme in my drinking over the course of my life was, we like to party. We don't party like you party, right? You're too much, right? And that happened to me over and over and over again. I tried geographical cures, and somehow, you know, like, I was one time where I was like, you know, hooked on some pretty serious drugs, some opiates, and I was like, I'm gonna move 2,000 miles away, I'm gonna move back to Colorado, I'm moving to Boulder, and I detoxed in an empty room in an apartment, and 4 days later, I found a dealer, right? I had just gone through the detox, didn't know anyone, and I found him, right? And it was on. So when I got sober, it was not my body, right? And that's the thing I think that people have to, like, if I look at what was the actual representation of my bottom, it had been worse, right? So I can think back, the great thing about, you know, for me, truly knowing that I'm an alcoholic is how vivid the obsession and the compulsion was. So I mentioned about thinking that I was insane because I didn't understand what the disease was. So I can think back to this room in Boulder, right? This was right before my roommates threatened to beat me up and they kicked me out of the house because I stole from everyone, right? You hear people talk about like this going to look, oh, I was the type of like alcoholic that would steal your wallet and help you look for it. Like, I did that. I did. And the thing was, I remember coming to in the morning, right, and hearing the birds, and thinking, I just can't do this anymore, right? And I said I was going to get sober today. I'm gonna get my life together. This is the day, like, I'm supposed to, you know, delusions of grandeur. I'm like supposed to be more important, right? And by 12 o'clock, the obsession was so strong that I would steal from anyone and do whatever it took, right? And so I'm so afraid to not drink and not use anymore, but I'm so afraid to go on without it, right? And I'm like, but I want this so bad. And I'm like, how do I get out of this hell? Killing myself is the only option, right? And so, you know, I tried through drugs, hence overdoses and things like that. But, you know, I came back to Boston with my tail between my legs because I had nowhere to live anymore. And I come back, jumped around from house to house. There was a family intervention. I'm immediately leaving to go, you know, go pick up. And my final day sober was Easter 2005, and I show up to this like jazz brunch in Cambridge, and I'm sick, right? And I'm trying to make it through, and I can't stomach any food, and I go outside to smoke a cigarette, I go into the bathroom to throw up, and I come back, and I look at my dad and say, hey, can I borrow some money from you? And he just looked at me and said, you must be really, really sick to come here looking like that and to think that I'm gonna give you. The only thing we want to do is take you to a detox. And luckily enough, that was my one and only time going to detox. But I was there for a long time, right? So I went for 5 days, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to get this, right? And I pick up the phone, and I call my mom. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to get out in like a day or two, right? Can I come stay with you? And she was like, not this time. And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean? I'm going to like do this. And she was like, no more. And I hung up the phone on her, and I picked up the phone, and I called my dad. And I was like, can I come stay with you? And he was like, not this time. I was like, are you kidding me? And I hang up, and I call my aunt, and I call my sister. And I'm like scrambling, right? And the anxiety is setting in. Like, what am I going to do, right? And like they all transpired against me or something, right? And I didn't know, and I didn't remember, but at some point I had a moment of clarity when I'm driving with my dad, and I said to him, and he had to remind me of this later because I didn't remember, and I said to him, in a couple days I'm going to feel better, and I just don't want to do this again, right? And so I had nowhere to go, so I went to long-term treatment, and I bounced around a little bit, and I ended up staying at a treatment center for 9 months, right? And I hated every second of it. And I remember, you know, it was a therapeutic, like this modified therapeutic community where it was like everybody had a job and like you had to stand up in the, you know, in front of 70 people and tell them like, you know, like what your gratitudes are and when you love this place. And I would be like the emo kid with black nail polish and the long hair. And I'd be like, you guys are my family and this will never be my home. And they're like, all right, this will be good. And I'm like at tables, like they had like a contract with the state, so there's people coming out of jail there, right? And I'm like just this kid from the suburbs that listens to emo music. And I'm like, oh, excuse me, let me grab the salt. And they're like, you reached in front of me, I'll cut you. And I'm like, I don't belong here. Right? I need to get out of here. And the only thing that I can say is this, is that like for the first time I had physical sobriety. Now, it was this weird place where you couldn't leave for 3 months. And then your fourth month, you could go to one meeting a week. Your fifth month, you can go to two meetings a week. Your sixth month, you can go to three meetings a week. And I got a lot of commitments that came in, right? And I remember I would share, and I'd be like, hi, my name is Julie, I'm an addict. Because God forbid you thought I was just an alcoholic, right? Ego high. Like, no, no, you have to know I'm a drug addict, right? And I hadn't drank in years when I got sober. I hadn't drank in years. And I remember I get out of that place and I don't know what to do, right? Like, I was like, what is happening with my life? Like, I know I can't go back to my friends. I know I can't do anything that I used to do. So I'm going to take my ass to an AA meeting. And things got better, right? So I get some more physical sobriety and I start to get a job again. And then my family takes me back in. I'm starting to date again, right? Like, all's good, right? And I remember there's some high highs and some low lows, right? Those peaks and valleys were pretty intense. And things are getting better until they're not getting better, right? Until the job is giving me constructive criticism and I'm like, that's it, I'm quitting, I hate this job. The girl I'm dating wants to go with her friends and I'm like, she doesn't like me anymore, and it's like, everything was just so intense and so raw. And all of a sudden, about a year and a half in, I wake up and I'm like, I hate this. And I think I want to die, right? And immediately I'm like, I got screwed by AA, right? Like, I'm sober. Like, I'm sober for almost 2 years at this point, and I have the same feelings in sobriety that I had when I was using, and I was like, this is bullshit, right? And I went to a meeting, and I raised my hand, and like I always did, I would go into the meeting, and I would share some craziness, right? Some mess. And I try and, like, leave before, like, anyone could come and talk to me. And it's like, I remember sharing in the meeting and how bad I felt. And this old timer came up to me and I was like desperately like, please help me save my life, right? And he was like, it's good to hear you, kid. And I was like, thanks. He goes, put a plug in the jug. And like my just heart dropped. And I was like, a plug in the jug? Like, I was thinking about killing myself, dude. Right? And luckily this kid was listening. Right? And I never talked to the kid. Because like I judged him, right? Like he was younger than me. Goofy, he had like a terrible vocabulary, he like tripped over his own feet all the time, and I was like, not my kind of dude. And he comes up to me and he was like, hey dude, like, I know exactly how you feel. And I felt like that, and I don't feel like that anymore. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, I could show you, right? Like some guy showed me, I could show you. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then the next day I went to a meeting and people were like, oh, Brian's your sponsor? And I was like, wait, I have a sponsor? Like, I could not ask another man to be my sponsor, right? Like, it was just like, that was like way too much. And thank God this kid did that. He saved my life, right? And I was a terrible sponsee. He'd be like, call me. I didn't call him. He'd be like, we're meeting at 11 o'clock on Sundays. I want you to read. I want you to highlight. I want you to underline. I want you to circle anything you don't understand. And I'm in my car at 10 o'clock, like scrambling, you know what I mean? And he didn't fire me. Right? And as I did the steps, some things really start to come to light for me. It was like one big one was like, I carried so much with me, right? The weight of the world was so intense. And I had like I like to say like I had a backpack of all the shit, right? People I harmed, the terrible relationships, the bad boyfriend that I was, you know, the bad roommate, stealing stuff and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, when things were going good, I would take that backpack off and I would rummage through all those memories and I'd be like, no, you're a piece of shit. You do not deserve anything good, right? And I would knock myself down. And when things were bad, I would take that backpack off and be like, see, you don't deserve anything. You're a piece of shit. Right? And the thing is this, is that like, as I started reading the book and doing this process, I quickly started to realize that I was an alcoholic, almost 2 years into AA. Right? I was like, holy shit. Once I started, I couldn't stop. And once I stopped, I obsessed about it. I just drank my booze, I smoked my booze, I snorted my booze, and I shot my booze. Holy shit, right? And this higher power thing, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God, right? But it had been shown to me over and over again that, like, I'm an alcoholic, and I related to this book. The biggest, most important word to me in this book was in Jim's story when it gets italicized. It says, suddenly, right? Suddenly, the thought crossed my mind. Whiskey in the milk, right? Like, that was it for me. Suddenly encapsulated everything, right? All my resolve was gone, and I was like, well, this isn't working for me. I think I do need to get a higher power. And it was shown to me through that sponsor, like, there was a blockage, right? All the stuff that I had was blocking me from creating my own concept of a higher power, right? And it was so freeing, right? Like, I'm, like, stoned. Like, I didn't, like, cry for years. And doing a third step with another man, like, brought me to tears. Right? Like, it changed me. And I was off and running. And things were good. Right? And so I did the escalator. I met a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous that had a few more years than me. And we got married. Bought a house. We had a kid. We had another kid. I started a business. Fucking jackpot, right? But life gets tough, right? I remember I was out of order, but I remember around that 2 year mark, and I was like, I kind of hate like this whole setting. Like I was in the burbs, and it was like crusty old dudes like talking about like, oh, I lost my house, and I lost my car, and I lost my custody of my kids, and I lost all this stuff, and I was like, I can't relate. I never had shit, right? Like. And someone's like, why don't you go to like YP meetings in Boston? And I was like, that's a good idea. And so I would travel into Boston and eventually moved into Boston, and it was great. And all of a sudden, I woke up one day, and I was like, huh, like, I'm that guy that could lose everything, right? Like, wow, when did that happen? And, you know, owning a business and having employees and then having kids, and it was like, if I, you know, I leave my house at 5 a.m. to go to work, and if I go to a meeting at night, right, like, I don't get to see my kids, because then I'm up at 5 a.m. and I'm like, well, now I'm weighing this out, right? Meetings, kids, all that kind of stuff. And I had moved up to Reading, and I'm like, I hate the meetings up there, you know? Like, they just weren't working for me. And my ex-wife wasn't going to meetings either, right? And it's starting to get a little hairy. Pandemic hits. My business is shutting down. I'm like, and I'm a super extrovert. Like, I could be out every night. Like, I love being around people. It fills my cup. And I'm like in my basement doing 8 hours of Zoom training sessions with clients. And money's just like, I'm losing money, and I don't know what's happening in my business. And my ex-wife gets the idea that we should do counseling. And I was like, okay. And it was, didn't go well, right? So I move out of the house. Basically, so my ex-wife, after 18 years of being an alcoholic, decided she wasn't an alcoholic anymore. She didn't tell me, though. She forgot to tell me. And I was wondering why things were getting real crazy, right? And my life's falling apart, right, in sobriety. And the first thing I did was not go to a meeting. The first thing I did was I called up I said, hey dude, I'm a mess right now. I need direction. I need a sponsor. Right? And he was like, all right, let's do this. And I embarked on getting back to AA. Right? I jumped back into meetings, and I, for the first time in so long, right? Now, I took years off for meetings, but I didn't remember what it was like to go to a meeting and take. For so many years, it was about going to a meeting and giving. Right? Like, gotta share the message, right? And I was like, I don't have anything to say, right? And I'm just gonna sit here and I'm just gonna take. And all my friends were gone, right? They moved away, some went back out, some died, a lot died, right? And trying to get back into meetings and trying to make friends, it's a hard thing, right? Like, everyone's got their groups. And you go in and I'm like, oh, hey, I'm like, not a newcomer, I got 15 years, right? Like, hard, real hard. But I just kept trudging and doing it. And and I had a new experience, right? So my sponsor had me doing the work out of like a big book step study, which I was like, so we have time back, right? I got to meetings and I'm like, I don't like your 10-minute like intro of all the things that you do to qualify to speak, right? And so, another example of bias, right? Like, I'm just like, no, right? Like, I'm good. And I had to humble myself to do whatever this man asked. And I had a total new experience. And some of the things that had happened was this, is that, like, so for me, as an alcoholic, step one was pretty easy for me when I came in, right? And I'm thinking, like, okay, like, I got it. Like, I'm an alcoholic, and I'll always be an alcoholic. Cool. The big reveal to me, like 15 years in, 3 years ago, when I came back to AA, was like, yeah, I know I'm selfish in my thinking. I know I'm self-seeking in my actions. I know I'm dishonest outwardly and inwardly. And I know fear rules my life. I know it. But the thing is, like alcoholism, like, that is me at my core. That is who I am. And I'm given a reprieve on a daily basis, contingent on action and enlarging my spiritual life, whatever that means to me, right? Just like my obsession around alcohol, I'm given a reprieve from that, contingent on daily action. As soon as I stop, I become that person again, and I make a mess of my life in sobriety, right? And I want to die in sobriety. And so it was real cool because, like, we did some different things that I'd never done. So, like, when doing, like, you know, the fears, as I was doing the turnarounds, like, he had me make a list of, like, every fear that I had listed and how many times it had made and presented itself, right? And I'm like, my top offenders were fear of abandonment, fear of not getting what I want, and fear of losing what I have, right? Amongst many other things. But those are my three top offenders. And coming to terms with the fact that people abandon me all the time, and it's happened my whole life, emotionally, not just physically, that I don't get what I want all the time, and I lose what I have all the time. The crazy thing is my fear around those are so strong that I will make a mess of my life trying to prevent those things from happening, even though they happen all the time, right? And it was a big, like, awakening for me, right? To be like, holy cow, man, like, I can't do this, as I knew before, right? But it's like, it's so insidious, the alcoholism is so insidious, it's like, yeah, I know I'm not the center of the universe, right? Like, I know the world doesn't revolve around me, but I'll find new ways to make it around me while telling myself that I know that it's not about me, right? And my world gets so dark, and it gets so shitty when I'm the center of the universe, right? Like, you're not acting the way I want you to act. You're not making me feel the way I want you to make me feel, right? Like, those things, and I take it personally, and it's so heavy, right? And it rules me. And the cool thing is this, is that, like, I found a meeting recently. So it's called Dignitary Sympathy. It's my home group. And I picked it for Monday because I have my children on. I have 50-50 custody, and I'm always home on Monday. And, like, so I always do that Zoom. It's great. And the cool thing, I gravitated towards this because it focuses on the five basics, right? Did I pray and meditate today? Did I do any AA, read any proof literature? Did I talk to my sponsor? Did I plan my day around a meeting? And was I of service to another alcoholic? Boom. Right? And when I'm doing that stuff, it's kind of weird. Everything kind of works out, right? Like, all of a sudden, just like when I am at, so as an atheist, like, I'm, like, kind of, like, predisposed to, like, not get on my knees, right? And I've had to be beaten into a state of reasonableness to be like, it doesn't matter. I'm an alcoholic. And for me to get on my knees and for me to pray in the morning and night is so critical for me to having that peace that I want, the reprieve that I was always looking for. And although I don't believe in God, I have a higher power of my own understanding, right? And for me, the time that I truly feel that connection is through service, right? And for many years, I was one of those people that sat in meetings and was like, oh, you know, I'm of service at work, and I'm of service to family. That doesn't cut it for me. It has to be with an alcoholic for it to really have the impact that I need. And I don't believe in altruism, right? Like, even if I just feel better about myself, it's not altruistic. And that's fine, right? But service to others is the thing that, like, makes it all work, because, like, suddenly my problems are so small. Suddenly I'm not ruled by fear, and I'm paying my bills, and I'm opening up the emails, and I'm doing all the things that, when my world is dark and I'm the center of the universe, become too overwhelming for me, right? It's a great paradox, right? That energy that I give to another person somehow fills me with the energy that I need. Right? And so that's why sponsorship is so important to me. And I can only do that through having a consistent connection with my higher power. My predisposition is to think about myself. Right? So I'll run without having sponsees and things like that. And, you know, I'm going to wrap up with this. I got a couple minutes left. And I think the thing that's really important as a takeaway is that. So, when I got sober, physical sobriety kind of started it off, like, to give me that launching pad to eventually have that emotional bottom where I was, like, willing to do some work. It works, right? It's suggestions, and it has to be suggestions because I'm bullheaded, as most of us are, and, like, I don't want to be told what to do. And I needed to experience what that pain was on my own to be willing to say, I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do whatever you want. And what a gift. What a privilege it is to get the reprieve that I always wanted and say, I'm good. I'm going to take a break from it. Right? I'm too busy. And that I can come back to Alcoholics Anonymous and the things that worked for me before work again. That's a privilege. Right? I just want you to know, I almost said the F word, that it's been so hard not to swear on this. Like, usually, like, that's every other word, so I think I've done very well. But the point is this, is that you can recommit at any time. Right? At any time you say, I'm dropping the ball, like, I can go back and do it again. It works. Right? It works. If you're an alcoholic. You might not be an alcoholic. I don't know. It's not for me to decide. But if you're an alcoholic, once you start, you can't stop. And once you stop, you obsess about it. I don't know. It works, right? I don't know how, I don't know why, but it works. Thank you guys for letting me share. That's it for me.